Great to look back on All-Star Mile Day with Dino and Brendan Delaney. We'll touch on the Coolmore Classic. What a good day of racing it was at Rose Hill. And Melody Bell breaking Sunline's record and taking out her 14th Group 1 in the Bone Crusher at Ellerslie. Dino, as I come to you, the weather was predicted to turn a bit at Moonee Valley. It did, but I don't think it detracted from the spectacle of the All-Star Mile.
No, it certainly didn't, Warren, and it was... Forget sectional times, forget breaking it down. It was just a great clash of two equines, two great jockeys, and just a struggle, and just a fantastic race. And good to see last night that the trophy ended up at the spiritual home of Victorian racing, the Emerald Hotel.
Indeed, it ended up at the Emerald. I'm hoping it's escaped relatively unscathed. As I come to you, Brendan Delaney, it was just a race. I suppose the marketing gurus at Racing Victoria and at Moonee Valley will be able to use the closing stages of that race to market racing for years to come.
It was just a good horse race, wasn't it, after the odd results we had seen earlier on in the day. If you're a little bit down on the whole game, it was a whether you're on the winner, whether you're on the horse that finished down the track, it was just a good race to remind you why you love the game.
Dino outlined a key part of it, the clash between Mugatu and Russian Camelot, but also the clash between Hugh Bowman and Damien Oliver.
Russian Camelot starting to dart through the field, and then Probabil, the Harrovian, up to Behemoth. As they reach the 350, they run the corner. They were followed by Muggets, who held up, and here comes coming through Russian Camelot and tanking through along the inside as Luna Fox. Muggets coming at Russian Camelot, then Behemoth, Russian Camelot, and Muggets stride for stride. Muggets fights Muggets for New South Wales. One All-Star Mile, 3.5. Second Russian Camelot, a gap to Luna Fox or Behemoth. It was a terrific race. Then
Well, Dino, you've talked about how exciting the race was. Now you've had time to digest it. Take us through your thoughts on how it unfolded.
Yeah, well, it was. You always had that Shout the Bar and Graceful Glamour were going to be going forward, and Behemoth used his gate to advantage, and so did Mugatu. And so, you know, in the run, Mugatu had that advantage on Russian Camelot, but one of the great resources we've got at racing.com is the Steward's Vision, and just watching Damien Oliver plot his path around Shout the Bar and have Mugatu to his inside, and then be, you know, waiting virtually to just try and hold him in. Just the Harrovian, though, but Brad Stewart using the whip in the left hand probably just wandered him off a line a bit, and then that was enough for the run for Mugatu to come through, and he pounced on it. He loved the ground, and yeah, it's all about timing. I think if this race had been run at 3 o'clock, it might have been a totally different race altogether. But as the conditions came, so did the chances. Certainly Mugatu and Russian Camelot relished them as well.
That's a valid point Dean raises, Brendan. You've got the rain coming through the day. It is an outdoor sport, but it probably did influence the race. You look at the way Probabil handled the prevailing conditions. By all the time the race was run, she would have probably been a totally different athlete if the race was run earlier in the day.
Yeah, most definitely. There was a number of them that the riders reported they just weren't comfortable at all. We always know Mr. Quickie's there and thereabouts in this sort of field, and he just didn't like it one little bit. Even for 50 Stars, Johnny Allen reporting it was still even a little bit too wet for him by the time it was time for him to try and plot a course through nearer the inside. But just to watch in isolation the rides of Bowman and Oliver and Ollie's tactics, it looked like there was 1.5 room for horses, and then Ollie was able to pounce and get around the outside, and just that moment on the turn where you can see him just have a look back to his right hand side, and maybe if he had his time again, does he keep rolling at that stage of the race and try and pinch a little bit of a margin on Hugh Bowman with Mugatu? But he just tried to hold him in, and the longer he could hold him in for, the better it was going to be for Russian Camelot. But maybe Mugatu just got through the ground a little bit better. But, you know, in the game of inches, if Ollie maybe had his time again, he maybe pushes the button and goes at the top of the straight instead of just gathering his thoughts there for a little bit. I thought Behemoth did a good job. Luna Fox just proved that he's up to this grade, and I thought the Harrovian gave a good account of himself. One of the outstanding runs was Streets of Avalon. He's not a 1,600-metre horse. He was 60-1. He was a weight for age Group 1 winner over 1,400 two starts ago. He's probably gone 2,000 metres there yesterday. He was no closer than 4 and then 5 to the fence at different stages. And I thought he did a tremendous job, but maybe in his favour, he's probably out in a little bit better ground.
Stewards are going to follow up with Graceful Glamour, who basically was eased out of the race, Dino. Sir Dragonette, Sir Dragon A, where's he at, Dean?
Well, I think he's at, a lot of people questioning how he won a Cox Plate. Maybe it's the run after having that hard run in the Melbourne Cup that's just taken all the sting out of him altogether, because he was non-competitive first up, and he was back in the pack yesterday on ground that we know he handles. We saw him do it Cox Plate Day. So, he's a long way off his best at the moment.
Behemoth, we've heard David Jolly, I think in partnership with Matty Stewart, talk about potentially rolling along right on the speed. Maybe just more by default yesterday, Dean, that he found that spot?
Yeah, I think the day was panning out that way, that maybe Craig probably assessed that if he let Graceful Glamour cross him, she's just no good in the ground, and we saw that she dropped right out, and he'd be the one directly behind her, so he had to virtually hold her out. And the thing about the Behemoth is probably at the 4-500, he probably wanted to really try and kick away because there were a few weakening. He got on the wrong leg and he really crabbed around the home turn, so he didn't get any margin on the other runners. Now, it wouldn't have changed the result, but I think he'd run a clearer third, and he was very brave in defeat.
What do we make of the overall quality of this race? $5 million in prize money. It's deserving of the accolades that it's been receiving, Dino, this year's edition?
Yeah, well, probably obviously didn't handle the ground. Unfortunately, Arcadia Queen was scratched, but she probably wouldn't have handled the ground. The Cox Plate winner's out of form, but the two best horses on the day are two elite horses, second and fourth, or in third and fourth in Cox Plate. So they're very good horses. So it was just a marvellous race, and the actual contest itself, I think, it made it.
We've got some SMSs for races throughout the program. We'll get to them as we come, and we'll talk about how the track evolved during the course of the day. We were starting off on a good four, and Playoffs, Fanciful Toff and Chaska were three from the Mar and Eustace stable contesting the race over 2,500.
Playoffs up to Coin Collector, 350 metres to go, and the sprint is on. A length and a half, Fanciful Toff, and then came Chaska. It's Playoffs and Coin Collector. It's a dash for the final 200 metres. Playoffs gets a nose in front of Coin Collector. Fanciful Toff off their heels. Playoffs 100 metres to go in front from Fanciful Toff, who's coming. Playoffs punched out a neck. Fanciful Toff having a lunge. They hit it. Playoffs. Playoffs just beat Fanciful Toff. Coin Collector third, and then...
Plenty of discussion here, Brendan, about conceding the lead on Fanciful Toff. The stewards spoke to T.O. Nugent after the race. How did you see it unfold?
Well, I think had he had Aurora Symphony been in the race, he would have been quite happy to hand up the lead to Aurora Symphony. But when he came out, it changed the ball game a little bit. He's never been in front really before. He raced close enough there when he took off a fairway from home and was able to win. But in recent times, his preparation, he hasn't been on the speed. So maybe they just didn't want to roll that dice and have the big horse maybe exposed and get it all wrong. He was right there in the market, and they elected to take cover and had maybe the Johnny Allen. He made a race winning move later on in the race, but probably the race winning move was for him to come off three back the inside and get up outside of the leader. If not, there would have been plenty of room for T.O. to manoeuvre around had Johnny sat there on the fence. So, but with the slow tempo, it wasn't going to help. He needed to be out and rolling, and a split second decision didn't go his way, where it's easy to sit back and analyse after the race, but when they're making decisions, in the space of three or four strides, it's pretty hard to try and knock them for that, and he's been beaten a short head, so he almost got it right. The gaps come earlier, he wins the race. So Playoffs rated well by Johnny Allen up there on the slow speed, and by not hitting the trigger as quickly as he could have, he held Fanciful Toff in there. Coin Collector, that's about him up on the speed and rolling, but he just struggles to win a race after he put a couple together, but it did take him a while to string those couple of wins together, and Chaska needs it to roll along a bit faster than that, and Siobhan Renegade just wasn't happy at all. But Playoffs won. Fanciful Toff beating a short half head. He comes out, maybe he over races, who knows.
We're on a good four at this stage, Dino. Brian, to be briefly upgraded to a good three before heading back in the other direction. What are your thoughts on this race?
Yeah, well, we had four or five races on the four or three ground, and this was just a trot and canter and a 600 metre sprint. Now, probably I would have thought Coin Collector would have gone a little bit faster than he did, and probably that's what T.O. Nugent thought. Johnny Allen was in the right spot, dictated. I mean, these horses should just grind home, they're stayers. Fanciful Toff ran the fourth best last 200 of the meeting. So, you know, you're basing that bait on 5 to 6 races, but, you know, there were still sprint races involved in those races, and he sprinted as hard as anything nearly for the day. So it was a good run in defeat, but the race structure didn't really suit him, and Siobhan Renegade for Billy Ryan was a total forgive, hit the rail going out of the straight, and another one that was asked to sprint hard and not really its go, more of a stayer.
When the steward spoke to T.O. Nugent, he basically outlined what you said, Dino, that he thought that Corn Collector would go a little bit quicker. His original plan was to follow Aurora's Symphony, that he thought would set a reasonable tempo, but obviously a late scratching at the barriers there, Aurora's Symphony. And in retrospect, now knowing how slowly they did go, T.O. said he would have been better to hold the lead. But as you outlined, Brendan, probably there are always things easy to do in retrospect, and you know, if he did hold the lead, he may well have been able to control the tempo, but he had to make that decision, and he was under instructions to get cover, but that was in with the presence of Aurora's Symphony in the field, Brendan.
No doubt he would have appreciated Aurora's Symphony there, and he would have liked Corn Collector to go much faster, but who knows how Fanciful Toff would have coped with it if he was the one that was left in front having to lead. He dropped his head and relaxed okay, but without really being up there and leading before and trying to roll, it could have all been foreign to him, and it could have went badly the wrong way.
I'll paraphrase what Michael from Brisbane has said via SMS, but he certainly thinks that those tactics cost Fanciful Toff the race in the first. Thanks for your contribution, Michael. We head to the second, and coming off a good victory in Murray Bridge in South Australia last start, Scorched Earths with a heavily backed favourite.
500 to go. It's the $1.1 million colt, Dio, in front by a neck to Predetermined, as they quicken a length and a half to Scorched Earth, who attaches itself to the back of those. They were followed by Wizard of Oz, Montana Flash, and behind them Glitter and Gold around the turn at the 200. It's Dio a length, Predetermined, Scorched Earth, every hope to the outside, and then Wizard of Oz and Montana Flash at the 100. Dio in front, but here comes Scorched Earth. Scorched Earth moves up, takes the lead, blazing the trail today, and Scorched Earth won it by 3/4 of a length. Second in the race, Dio. Photo third, Wizard of Oz, Prominent, Predetermined, Montana Flash behind.
Matty Hill working beautifully as usual, Dino. What happened here?
Yeah, it was a pretty gentle tempo. Dio led about 3 lengths below standard thanks to daily sectional times. They didn't go a lot harder in the middle section, and they sprinted home. They actually sprinted very hard. Scorched Earth best 400 and 200 of the meeting. And she's a good filly. She showed that anything that makes ground in that clockwise classic at Ballarat, it's hard to do, and she did that. So from day one, we've seen that she's had talent, and now it's parlaying into wins. Dio ran well, Wizard of Oz. They both came down here looking for the dry ground, so they were in early in the day. They got the dry ground and both ran okay. Predetermined rode the speed, was just fair. I thought Montana Flash ran a better race, was home the third best last 200 of the meeting. I think looking for 1,400 metres and just a bit more galloping room. I think he's a horse that hasn't really relished being tight amongst horses. So I think there's a race for Montana Flash not too far away.
Your thoughts here, Brendan?
Gentle tempo, as Dino outlined, was a good way of describing it. They didn't go hard. Dio, every chance in front. Scorched Earth tucked in behind. And I just love the way she was able to quicken around the bend. She really picked them up quickly on the circle. And Ollie was pretty kind to her in the run to the line. She was doing enough on her own to beat Dio, who's done a good job. Wizard of Oz was okay. Predetermined for mine was just beaten off a little too quickly with that speed. Montana Flash was okay. And Glitz and Gold, her race was done at the start when the favourite or the winner jumped, just got on top of her a little bit, and then she got back into a spot where you didn't really want to be in the race with the slow tempo on, and she didn't look all that comfortable in the straight. She really wanted to lug back down towards the fence, so maybe a forgivable day for Glitter and Gold, but the winner, she's a nice filly, and with a colt back to her inside, you could be forgiven of who was the filly and who was the colt. She's a big, strong girl.
Dean, just something also early in horses' career, they're learning, and it's great to get the different types of experiences. And just the way the race shaped up yesterday with her beginning a bit awkwardly, Ollie being able to tuck her into that 1-1 just could be, you know, part of Scorched Earth learning a bit of versatility in her career.
Well, very much. I mean, she's virtually experienced all facets of racing in her short career because she went, you know, at a pretty steady tempo in that clockwise classic. She ran along in reasonable speed in the Prelude, and she certainly ran along at a reasonable speed in Adelaide. So yesterday probably got a happy medium, and she's a really nice filly. And and Damien Oliver explaining in the post-race interview that he trialled her at Geelong and he knew that she was a good filly. It was just good timing that he matched up with her yesterday.
It's a good day at the office for the Mar and Eustace stable. They already had a winner in the first with playoffs. They saddled up Purse Anne in race three, who was first up at 2040.
South Pacific a length away. Irish Flame hooks out wider. Two off the lead and Sewell-Ling home. Mongolian Marshall in limited room. Purse Anne's running on from the back. Too close the sun around the turn at the 250. Over a length, Irish Flame. Purse Anne, Mongolian Marshall squeezed up the middle. Too close the sun, grabbed by Irish Flame. Purse Anne's the threat. Irish Flame at the 100. Here's Purse Anne, the outside though. Purse Anne and Irish Flame. Stride for stride. It's a great battle. Purse Anne. Persan, I think, just beat Irish Flame. Heads up and down, Mongolian Marshall for third from Kentucky Breeze.
Terrific training performance and just what a good genuine horse he is, Brendan. And I think most people at the turn into the home straight would have been happy to be cheering home Irish Flame, whether they'd backed it or not, with Brett Scott hopefully on the road to recovery in hospital.
Yeah, awful incident with Brett earlier on in the week, but Irish Flame just continues to turn up to the races, doesn't he? He went around in that meeting midwinter, Moonee Valley last year, the one that was called off, and worked his way through to win a Ballarat Cup and then ran well in a Blamey. He's not going to be far away, but he ran into a really nice stayer there yesterday in Perth, and speed was nice for him from too close to sun when he was a fraction slow. He was forced to work, and then onto the first turn, it looked as though Lockie Neindorf was trying to drop in, but Craig Williams was having none of that on South Pacific and left him three deep, and he really spent the carrots at the wrong end of the race. By the time he had got round to the 1200, he'd done a stack of work to find the lead and set up a nice speed for those to come from the back. Persan was able to jump on the back of Irish Flame from about the 600 and run over the top of him. Kentucky Breeze was good to the line and hard to miss Mongolian Marshall. Zach Spain saved all the ground back to the inside, and just as he got through and looked like he was going to be right in the money, he turned into a pinball and was stopped in his tracks pretty much, and that cancelled him out of the finish. But he was beaten 1.7. You would think he would have gone to the line with the first two, and maybe with that inside advantage on the corner, he might have been able to pinch a little margin on them shortly after they flattened out. But he was a good run, but all honest to Persan, on to earning himself another spot in the Melbourne Cup.
Couple of suspensions out of the meeting, and they both incurred in this race. Too close to the sun, Lockie Neindorf getting a suspension when he tightened up Blenheim Palace at the 1200 metres when he just had enough of being posted three wide, and then Matty Cartwright just shifted in and tightened up Kentucky Breeze early in the straight. Dino, how did you see this race?
Yeah, well, this is a really good race for the tail of the tape of the sectional times, because the first four at the 800 were the last four at the finish, so he just went way too hard. It became a stayer's race, and the best stayer in the race, as we know, coming off a fifth in the Melbourne Cup, was Persan. What we didn't know was whether he'd be ready to do it first up over 2,040 metres. And most of his career, he's drawn well or rode the speed. We saw a different dimension to him yesterday off that fast speed and probably just an ideal first up run. But actually, the last 200 metres, his pickup was terrific considering the tempo of the race. So it was a really good return. Irish Flames, as honest as they come, Mongolian Marshall, Brendan's outlined that he was a touch unlucky in Kentucky Breeze, got balked at a crucial stage, and we know he just doesn't like horses around him, and he actually picked up and went to the line again okay. But the back four, forgivable. Too close to sun, just nearly 12 lengths above standard the first 1200 metres, just way too fast.
As usual, Dino, some mixed feedback via the SMS, but a general question from Peter that's pretty broad. Dino, the Valley Saturday and the previous 2 weeks at Flemington and Sydney races have thrown some very ordinary results for favourites. On reflection, thoughts on why these good things running so poorly? Race structure, tempo, track bias, or we getting carried away, they being overpriced, so to speak, in terms of the short price favourites being seen as good things? I suppose different races, different tracks, different conditions. But there have been a number of well-supported runners going down in recent weeks and some surprise odds. Is there any overriding factor that could contribute to some of them, Dean?
Oh, I don't think so, Warren. It's, even if you didn't like September Run last Saturday in the Newmarket, did you think she was going to run eighth, sort of thing? You know, like she, you know, that was a genuine surprise of a short price favourite yesterday. Yeah, you could tell that a horse like Cherry Tortoni, probably 600 from home, was going to have his work cut out, because the way the race had set up, and Grand Slam's a good horse from the front, and the rain hadn't come at that stage. And I think we'll get to that race shortly. But yeah, I think there's been reasons for a few of them, but there are some that are just inexplainable. And say a horse like September Run, probably the top of the tree for me. I just didn't quite get how she went so poorly last week.
Per Sand taking out race 3, 2040, and a good campaign ahead, you would think, on a path to earning a spot in another Melbourne Cup. We got to the Able Stakes, 1,200 metres, and Ancestry went around a $3.40 favourite with Michael Poy aboard.
Ancestry up to the turn at the 350, kick for home, two lengths Usmanov, dollar for dollar, then GG second over. Pandemic's going to hunt the fence from Age of Chivalry, but Ancestry's off and gone around the turn at the 150, is four lengths in front. Ancestry with a big margin from dollar for dollar, riddle me that, GG second over, but Ancestry eased down, trotted in.
He's down, trotted in, and gee, the helicopter shot, Dino, was terrific. I think they'd gone about 50 metres and less than that, and he was a length in front.
Yeah, he was, and this was perfect for Ancestry, because what he likes to do is run out of the gate solidly, which he did, two lengths above standard, and ramp it up in the middle stages. That's his favourite sort of thing. He couldn't probably do it on his terms in the Oakley Plate, but he did yesterday. And then from there, it's really hard work. Riddle Me That's come home in the second best last 400 and 200 of the meeting. Was absolutely no match for the winner, but he's run really well. And there was, like a horse like Pandemic had no luck at all. He was home in some of the better sectional times of the day as well, but just no luck in running. But Ancestry, what he does is make his own luck, and he's a beauty, and back on song yesterday, and maybe a chance of backing up next Friday night.
Yeah, the William Reid Stakes, we'll talk about that. Marty Sinan, such a terrific track manager. There's a set of gallops scheduled for Moonee Valley tomorrow morning. They had the wear and tear of the late program yesterday, and then backing up for a Group 1 meeting next Friday night. So there's certainly some challenges from a maintenance point of view there, Dean.
There is, Warren, and it's at the back end of the season. And I think that showed yesterday. I mean, that's not Marty's fault, but it's right at the end of their... They're racing by the end of March. The track's worn out, and it's an old track now too. And when we got that rain yesterday, that track really deteriorated, probably more than the other city tracks would have. But that's just its age as much as anything, and the time of year. By mid-March, we've done a lot of racing at the Valley in the past 6 months.
Bill from Adelaide's got one via SMS for you, Brendan, just before we get your take on Ancestry's victory. Brendan used a term, I'm not sure what he meant. What did you mean by referencing a pinball for Mongolian Marshall?
Well, if you've played pinball and watched how they dart around, that's what he was like for about three or four strides at the top of the straight. He hit one, hit another, and then hit another one again. So that's probably a pinball, meat in the sandwich, however you want to put it, really.
What about Ancestry's victory?
He was really good there yesterday. By the time they had got to the first turn at the 800, you knew he was going to be awfully hard to beat, and you knew Pandemic was going to need a miracle to win from back there. Ancestry, really good. Dino's outlined the case for how he just likes to get out and run and do things on his own. Riddle Me That closed off nicely. I thought dollar for dollars chase was okay. Age of Chivalry, we've seen him get out to a mile and run fourth in a Cantata back end of last preparation, and we know 1,200 and Fresh probably isn't that sort of his go now, but he's giving the impression of a horse that's probably going to race better over a mile later on in this preparation. But he was okay back in the field, but Pandemic wasn't a great day out for him, and Usmanov just didn't travel at all well out of the gates and then onto the first turn. He mightn't have enjoyed his time there at Moonee Valley yesterday, but you'd like to see Ancestry back up on Friday night, and if you can get a similar run, they're going to have their work cut out chasing him.
One pretty general about race day experience, Dino, and it's a real challenge for clubs, but someone who was on course at the Valley yesterday, and there was some music playing after the race, and the interview with Hugh Bowman that was for racing.com, perhaps for Channel 7 as well, didn't go out over the PA, and it's a real balance in trying to know what to put over to the public who are on course. They're trying to create an entertainment experience as well, but I suppose as much as you can get of the participants and what the real purpose of the day's racing is over the PA is a positive for the people who've taken the trouble to get there?
Yeah, sure. I think if you don't hear from the superstars of the sport, well, you're sort of letting the sport down a little bit. It came across well. You know, I was off course yesterday, but it came across well how it was presented on Channel 7. But yeah, it's a shame that, you know, if you're on course and you don't hear from Hugh Bowman, and I don't think I've seen as much as Hugh. You know, I think a lot of the Winks wins, Hugh Bowman was relieved yesterday. He was genuinely excited. He was really pumped to win that race. It was great viewing, actually, to see him so exhilarated by a victory.
Part of the All-Star Mile experience, too, is the owner ambassadors. And we haven't touched on yet on Matt and Amanda, who also found their way to the Emerald last night, you know, and carting around a $250,000 check. So they've had a pretty good day.
Yeah, they've had a very good day, haven't they? And, good to see them join Andy and the team down at the Emerald.
They took Quinny's two fields in the first leg of the quaddies, but went wider in the last, effectively, to get very well rewarded yesterday. So close, Quinny, coming out to a good result yesterday. Head to the Alistair Clark Stakes. Bit of comment here via the SMS about this race. Jamie Carr put on a clinic aboard Grand Slam.
Grand Slam up to the turn at the 350. It's Grand Slam, the leader by three or four. Perua, Cherry Tortoni trying to wind up wide. Comanche Brave boxes on from Young Verta. Grand Slam in front here at the 150. Still four or five lengths in front. They're not going to get anywhere near Grand Slam. Grand Slam, five lengths in front. And what a win. Grand Slam did it easily. Won it by five, Young Verta Explosive Jack, Cherry Tortoni.
Craig from Keilor, a regular via the SMS. Brendan, lads hate potting jockeys at 90 kilos myself, but does Billy Egan have to become more proactive? Just seems to ride the same every time, very patiently. And obviously was back in the field. Maybe we'll get your take, Brendan, on how you thought that race shaped up.
Well, if he got any closer, if he settled any closer and the run was, and he was more proactive, I still don't think it would have made too much difference to the result. He Grand Slam was at the top of his game yesterday, and they were rewarded for making that decision to go to the Cox Plate. No more justified than rewarded, but he was caught wide, and maybe he can get a little fired up. So he rode in the way he's been ridden for the majority of his career there yesterday, maybe a little bit further back, but he was still a long way off them in the Australian Guineas on the turn the other week with a bit more of a solid tempo. So Billy's, you know, he rides that way quite often, and he likes to take inside runs and be patient. And it's a theory that works for him, and it probably works, you know, at a reasonable enough percentage for him to stick to it. And he was on a horse that we know has got a pretty powerful finish on him. Did that finish in the Guineas that he was able to produce down the outside take a bit of the gloss off him yesterday? Might have just been that really tough run that he probably didn't need going to an Alistair Clark. Had he settled closer, I still don't think he would have beat Grand Slam. He was really good there yesterday. Young Verta did a good job, but wide and looping runs weren't the flavour of the day there yesterday at Moonee Valley. And if they had been, Cherry Tortoni might have got a little bit closer than he did, but he would have had his work cut out beating the winner no matter where he settled.
I thought he looked terrific looking in the yard yesterday, Dino, Cherry Tortoni. I think Jane Ivell put him on top. Billy Egan's reported in the steward's report that he raced flat. How did you see the race?
Yeah, he's a bit of a fascination to me, Cherry Tortoni, because I'm getting the feeling he might be a better run on miler, but than an absolute stayer. I know he ran well in a derby, but it was a slowly run derby. Was it a staying test? Yesterday, he had to make a decision. He went back. It's pretty much in keeping with how the stable liked the horses ridden, and he does the bulk of his riding for Patrick Payne, and he likes his horses to get balanced and into a rhythm, but we've seen him ride other horses closer to the speed. Cherry Tortoni, when he's been closer to the speed in previous runs, probably the fastest and the closest he's been in a race was in the Spring Champion Stakes, and it was nearly the worst run of his career. So I think you've got to, you know, back in that they know their horse pretty well, that he can go exit, you know, a certain speed. And as Brendan said, it was very hard to make that looping run. And when you've got a Corfu Guineas place getter out in front and on song and on dry ground, he was going to be very hard to run down.
This race was run at a good three. From a sectional time point of view, how did Jamie Carr implement their plan, notified the tactics that they were going to go forward on Grand Slam?
Yeah, he went along. He went along at a a controlled speed. He went, if you take a look at what he did in the Cox Plate, I know he had a lighter weight and everything, but he went about 10 lengths faster than the average to the 800 metres on wet ground in the Cox Plate. So there was a fair reason he punctured that day, and he probably was over the top. But he was, even though he was going quite keenly yesterday, it was at a much slower speed. He ramped it up from the 800 to the 400, and I think Matt Hill was almost going to say splendid isolation, Brendan, on the home turn, but he changed his mind, and he was a long way in front and won easily. Young Werder's ticking over okay for Sydney, and they're a long way off the winner, though.
I don't know if we're not here to defend anybody, and Billy Egan, but I think he was had some intent of being even a pair or so closer. But out of the straight the first time, Dean, I think Johnny Allen was very intent on holding a spot off the fence on Explosive Jack, and that almost forced Billy to go back that pair, where he would have been a lot happier if Explosive Jack went to the fence and he could have settled that little bit closer. But Explosive Jack wasn't going to be placed there by John Allen.
Exactly right. And if you're the short price favourite, you're the hunted. And Billy Egan would have known that the other riders had a target on his back going into the race, and if he wanted to get a spot, they were going to make him earn it, and ultimately he couldn't get the spot he wanted, so he conceded and just went back to plan B. But I thought the horse should have run a clear second if he was at his best. He was well below his best yesterday, and it might have been a flat run. It might have been because he was in a... He's now been in two truly run staying races, and they are the Spring Champion Stakes in yesterday, and he's come up a little bit short. When he won the Vase, he went at a very gentle speed, and when he ran well in the Derby, it was a very, very slow speed. So, whether he's a genuine stay is my query.
Race 6 on the card at the Valley yesterday was the Whip Restricted Country Mile Series over 1,600 metres. A benchmark 80 worth $250,000.
Dictate in front by a Nectar Fontaine Diamond. Intellective always wide, a length off those, and then Rewarding Ruby, Jazz Star, Glassy Miss, four deep and two off the lead. This Skilled Cat behind them from Fiorente Lass. Then Maxi Mac, who's bailed away badly on the fence from Irish Playboy. Fontaine Diamond gets its bib in front from Intellective on the point of the corner at the 250. Astraeus tries to fight back, and then came Jazz Star, Glassy Miss, Irish Playboy into the straight at the 150. The leader, Fontaine Diamond, kicked away about a length and a half to Intellective. A wall's chasing Irish Playboy late with Fiorente Lass, but the leader is Fontaine Diamond for Patrick Maloney, and won the final from either Irish Playboy, Jazz Star, or Fiorente Lass. Then Intellective...
Well, Ben Brisbane's doing a terrific job with his team, Dino, from his base at Wangaratta. And there was a few that seemed to find Fontaine Diamond at the big odds. I don't know what to make of this race. And I've got to say, I'm probably don't know what to make of the concept either. I'm just not too sure how to read it or what its future should be.
Put in a carbon for me, Warren. But let's start with the positive. Ben Brisbane, trainer in form, should always probably keep them on your side. And his horses are just striking so well and looking great and running accordingly. And probably looked as though it was nearly gone at the 400-metre mark, but such was the nature of this race. Nothing much changed. Now, was that because of the whip strike rule? To me, they were just bobbing up and down. Because it was a relatively low-grade race, was that the reason? I'm not sure. But, big field and not much changed in that last 400 metres. I was tipping Indispensable. He missed the start, which wasn't ideal. Found a lot of trouble, and he was the only one that sort of made a little bit of ground late and without much room. But, a very hard race to dissect, and probably the biggest day in these horses' career.
Brendan, how do you see this race? Let's talk about how it was run yesterday, first of all.
Astraeus spent plenty of tickets trying to get around to the lead, but Fontaine Diamond was happy to hand up and was the one that was in front and still running on the turn and was able to hold them off. There were some runs behind that you just forget they were there. Jazzstar to some extent, but then Indispensable, Maxi Mac, La Falaise had to go wide. Kent Street was another one at a big price back in behind that didn't see a great deal of room. room and was stopped at about the 50 metres. Maybe the track was on the way down. Then there was some quite heavy rain around the time of that race, so maybe it was deteriorating then. Maybe they're just an even bunch of horses. Throw into the mix that do you want to use your five strikes up early if you're going to be some chance in the finish? Do you want to save them for the last 50 metres or so? I think the jockeys had a lot running through their mind in that race, and I'm sure there would have been some big penalties if they were going to go outside of the guidelines of the race. So I think there might have been some other things on their mind while they were riding as well.
I tend to agree, Brendan. And I suppose, Dino, if you're back in the field and you think you're needing to do something early to get your horse into the race, you're not wanting to use two or three strikes back in the field there. And I think ultimately in the home straight, it was testing conditions. There was a lot of horses spread across the track, not a lot of room. I think a lot of the riders were just in self-preservation mode.
Yeah, I think that's right, Warren. And look, all tracks are different. We've discussed this with the whip rule a lot. And Moonee Valley, you're often under pressure a long way out and you've got to get motivated. With the probably exception of the first heat at Colac, and Colac's still a good run in, the other heats have been at Swan Hill, Ballarat, Pakenham and Wangaratta. And they're tracks where you're on the bit for longer because you've got that long straight to build your momentum and then, you know, probably use your strikes at the right time. Then you get into the final and it's a totally different dynamic. So, look, if this is the future of going ahead of how to use the whip, this series, this ideology should be part of the Rising Star series. Teach the apprentices this is what they're going to be doing in the future. But I thought yesterday it was... Well, there were a few things because the rain had started to come and maybe they were an evenly bunched race, but I didn't think it was a great spectacle, but a great result for a good progressive stable.
Young trainer on the rise, Ben Brisbane, Paddy Maloney steering Fontaine Diamond to victory. We get to race 7 on the card. It became a race of attrition and there were some excited connections out there on course to see Air Defence contest the Vobis Gold Reef.
Air Defence lays down the law at the 350, gets a neck in front from Nevaez. Two further back, Energy Within Saltpeter. This is a bit of a slog as they come around the turn at the 200 metres. Air Defence a length in front of Nevaez, then Energy Within Saltpeter, Token Spirit, Ruba run on, 100 to go. Air Defence in front, now they're starting to run on, but it's Air Defence a length and a half, Saltpeter, Ruba, Token Spirit, Air Defence. Look at this, Real Sensations driving through and makes it interesting. Paddling near the line, Air Defence and Real Sensations dropped on it. It is a photo finish. Third photo, Saltpeter, Ruba or Nevaez.
Bit to talk about here, Brendan, and congratulations to Trevor and Carolyn who are out there braving the elements and watching their horse parade in the mounting yard and then cheering Air Defence home yesterday. They've had a terrific day at the races. I couldn't find him on top, Brendan. How did you see the race?
Couldn't find him on top, but not going to deny him the victory. He was tough up there on the speed. Across from the wide gates and outside, Nevaez ported the pressure onto him. And a bit of an understatement from Matt, a bit of a slog. It was definitely a slog. And Air Defence just hit a brick wall with 50 to go and was digging post holes and everything. But he had enough in hand. And I think he just had the nose down at the right time because they were coming for him. Real Sensation. That was a typical sort of Billy Egan ride, if you like. It's something that he does day in, day out, sort of up the fence, up the inside, looking for shortcuts. Didn't help his cause when he caught one across his face at about the 100 or so. So he's just gone down. I thought the run of Saltpeter was good. We were a bit of a question mark on him leading into his previous run. That was a soft tempo, stronger gallop there yesterday, and he's just been beaten. So he's coming back to something like what we know he can produce. I thought the run of Ruba was really good, and Token Spirit back and making those wide runs. Although they were crawling up the straight, it wasn't all that easy for those horses to do yesterday. But Air Defence, well done. Real Sensation, great ride through from Billy Egan and a race where most of them would have slept pretty well last night and probably still sleeping it off now.
Last five runners for the Shane Fleetner stable, Dean, have been winners, so he's placing his horses well and he must understand his horses well. I think post-race he mentioned in an interview with Jason Richardson that the instructions were to treat the 200 metre mark as the winning post, so just ride flat out and be totally out of gas for the last 200.
Well, he was. He ran home in 14:54 the last 200 metres. He ran his last 400 in 28. I think, Brendan, you said Hiskin steeple winners used to go quicker than that. this was a bizarre race. They went at a reasonable speed early, but they were gone at the 500, and it was just an absolute slog from there on in. Real sensation. Probably should have won. I think Billy Egan probably realised that the inside was where you wanted to be. He made a bit of a prisoner of it, kept going up the inside. The horse gets clear a bit earlier and doesn't get knocked, hit across the nose with the whip. But I think he wins. But Air Defence was there doing it tough and battled on well. Saltpeter, he had that wet track form from the winter. He ran quite well. Ruba had wet track form from the winter. Narvaez was totally gone at the 400 and he's been beaten less than a length. It was one of the more bizarre races you'd see.
And we're on a soft six by this stage, and we're not talking about the highest quality race on the program, but you reference the fact that, you know, it's late in the season and it's a, you know, it's a track that's had plenty of use, the Valley, and that's probably evidenced by the times they're running here, Dean.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, you know, the good horses in the next race, you know, Mugatu run home in 26.3 and 13.1. So, you know, it shows that, you know, even the elite were you know, well off usual speed. But, yeah, it certainly, went downgrade very quickly. And there was, you know, a significant downpour, but it certainly went downhill quick.
Air Defence holding off real sensation in race 7. What a great race, race 8, the All-Star Mile was. And we got to the last. There was a couple of late scratchings during the day with the track downgrade. The Billionaire and Vichy came out, left an even market with Cordia and Exeter from the Danny O'Brien stable fighting out favouritism.
King Star Rabba continually serving it up here to Exeter, and they're two lengths Lucifer's Reward, and then came Cordilla, who's about three off the lead, about to get mobile from Cielo Doro, Vongole, and So You Swing. Exeter had a kick around the turn at the 300 metres, a half length King Star Rabba, Cielo Doro off the fence, still three off, then Lucifer's Reward, Cordilla drops off at that stage from Vongole. Exeter goes for home, 150 metres to go, three lengths Cielo Doro, King Star Rabba, Vongole, but that's one way to keep the fluorescent yellow colours nice and clean. Lead all of the way. Exeter won it by four lengths to Cielo Doro. Then Vongole, King Star Rabba. So you...
Thanks to Pat from Doncaster from the SMS. Yes, Pat, I was lucky enough to have Mugatu on top in the All-Star Mile, but it was a day where we had a little bit of a siesta in the middle of the races. But thanks for acknowledging. Brendan, to you for the last. How did you see this pan out? They were getting pretty tired, a few of these late in the race.
They most certainly were, but punters were identifying rail and on speed was a place to be, and they really hammered Exeter late, particularly when the speed of the Billionaire came out of the race, and Damien Lane jumped onto the rail from barrier one. He wasn't giving it away, and he really owned that spot on the inside, and he was going to be hard to beat from a fair way out, particularly on the deteriorating track. Cielo Doro likes racing at Moonee Valley and runs up to that. Vongole, he wasn't happy in the ground at all. King Star Amber was up there with the lightweight trying to pull the pressure on, and is probably better in a weaker grade of race than that. And Cordia, she just wasn't happy in the conditions either. Ollie got her into a nice enough position, in a position where you'd expect her on ground that she was a little more comfortable in, to really to be able to sling off the back of. And not only was it wet ground, it was a deteriorating track, which is a little bit different to maybe getting onto that sort of surface earlier on in the day. There'd been plenty of horses over it before she had got there, and maybe a little bit more shifty than what she liked. She has won on a soft six before, but albeit probably was at Flemington, so, and maybe not as late on in the day where it's really deteriorated as it did there yesterday.
We're on a soft seven and probably heading south by this stage, Dino, and Cordia and Lucifer's Reward, both noted in the Stewards Report as not handling the conditions. What's your take on the last?
I think find the front, find the fence, and just, you know, keep going. And that's exactly what Exeter did. Had the big weight drop. I think Danny O'Brien's used these grand handicaps to advantage in recent times, and again yesterday that horse was well placed in the race, and probably scratching of the Billionaire left the leader, you know, being the leader up for grabs, and that's exactly what he did, and he went on to win the race. So now I think you just put a line through many of the runners here. They were just not happy in the ground at all.
Damien Lane, Danny O'Brien combining to take out the last with Exeter from an inside draw, went around at a $3.80 with those late scratchings throughout the day. The All-Star Mile, the highlight of racing at the Valley yesterday. There was good racing at Rose Hill with the Coolmore Classic. The feature, it's 12 to 10. Take a break on RSN 927. Come back and look at that meeting after this break.
In third position on the outside is Rillamin Ruby, Vangelic locked up, followed by Sweet Deal, Mezzi hitting the line well, further back to Subpoenaed Cronin, Ice Bath in a bit of traffic, Mezzi takes the lead of the 200 from Dame Giselle, Crone's getting a split, Mezzi in front of the 100, Crone goes up the inside and Crone takes the lead in the Coolmore, Crone draws clean out from Mezzi, it's a Queensland victory, Crone beat Mezzi, Dame Giselle third, Vangelic next, then All Saints Eve and Ice Bath, further back to Emerald from Rillamin.
Timmy Clark from an inside draw here. Dean, how did you see the Coolmore Classic?
Well, it was run at a fierce speed. Big field, and they really ran along. And Timmy Clark had pretty strict instructions listening to Ray Thomas earlier that she's got to cover Crone up for that one run. And on dry ground, she did it. And she sprinted hard at the end of a very fast run race. And obviously with Sovereign Award in the race, as opposed to last week where she set up a lead going steady. This week she set up a lead going very fast. So it was on from a long way out, and Crone was able to win. Mizzy backing up from last week, ran a super race. Dame Giselle getting back onto the genuine dry ground, I think, helped her. The lighter-weighted Vangelic ran quite well. And I like Shalo from a Melbourne perspective, but I think it was a case of that she just got too far back on that fast speed. She kept wanting to try and find the line, but she was just too far back to figure in the finish.
Thoughts here, Brendan?
Winner was good. She's always sort of promised to bob up and win a really nice race, Crone, but well-deserved for her yesterday and really enhances her breeding page. She had a nice enough run behind that good tempo, and she was able to really hook out and take advantage with that run. One run. Mizzy, good again. Subpoenaed. The chase was solid enough there. Rich Hips, I thought she did a good enough job from a long way back. All Saints Eve was good between horses. Shayo just got a little bit too far back, and Vangelic would have liked some clearer air. She got held up at the wrong stage of the race there, back near the inside. But all honours to Crone, she deserved one of those, and Timmy Clark got the instructions spot on.
Week out from the Golden Slipper Arcade, at a filly we know from down here, went around for Godolphin in the Magic Night Stakes.
Into the straight, Robodera swings in front of Arcaded. Abdullah goes full bore on Robodera. McDonald sits quietly on Arcaded, and quickly Arcaded moved up to put the head in front. Down the outside, Jamea with a good finish, and Latino Blend coming off heels. It's Arcaded in front, a half on Robodera, who sticks back. Then came Jamea, but Arcaded starting to edge clear closing stages, and the favourite home, Arcaded, won it by a length and a half. Nearly a dead heat for second. Robodera the fence, and Jamea wide out, and a head away fourth, Latino Blend.
I think unlikely to back up in the Golden Slipper, just listening to Ray Thomas and the feedback he's getting from James Cummings. Brendan, and a filly we know from down here, and once again, the Blue Diamond form holding up there.
Yeah, certainly did. Jump well on the speed, travel well outside the leader, and just capitalised on that good run. She was racing well down here before she went north, and she was solid. Robodera was good on the speed. Jamea was one that really caught the eye, got a long way back, and chased really well, maybe just peaked out that last little 50, but all honours to Arcaded. She had the nice run. She didn't have to do a lot of work to get there up on the speed after she really pinged the lids, and she was rewarded.
What did you think here, Dino?
Yeah, it's been amazing that you get these years where, one gender is better than the other, and the fillies are just that couple of lengths off the speed. It was a good win by Arcaded, but again, probably inferior to the Colts in the lead-up race. I think Jamea, as Brendan said, is a nice enough horse, just probably peaked on its run, and Latino Blend likewise. But they're not going to trouble anything in the slipper next week, this field.
The boys went around on the next race. Shakiro, the Magic Millions winner in the Pago Pago.
Coming around the turn, Tristate shows the way from the bull ringer. Shakiro hasn't got much room. Converge moves up with purpose. Now Tiger Malay gets cracking, getting past Marzu. It's Tristate being joined by Converge. Shakiro gets the run now between them. Then came Tiger Malay, ingratiating five off them. But Shakiro took the lead from Converge. Tiger Malay, Marzu late on the scene. It's Shakiro. Tiger Malay charges at him. But Shakiro just held on. Shakiro bounces back. One and a half head to Tiger Malay and the fast-finishing Marzu.
Could this form hold up next week, Dean?
I think I might have seen the Golden Slipper winner in this race, and it wasn't the winner. I think Ingratiating ran very well yesterday. The blinkers were off. He was too far back. He hit the line. Probably everything you'd want to see him do. We know he backs up well. I'll be interested to see if the blinkers go back on. He's, you know, obviously high up in that Blue Diamond conversation with Artorias and Animo, and he's big odds. I think he went very well. Shakiro, he's following the same pattern as he did into the Magic Millions. The Magic Millions didn't rate very well, so whether he'll actually springboard off this to be a Golden Slipper contender, I'm not sure. I'm pretty confident that Ingratiating will, and I think Halala will win a good race one day. He hit the line well. He's not a slipper horse, but maybe as the races get longer, I liked his run. So I think this will be a really good race.
Race worth taking note from Dean. Brendan, how did you see it?
Yeah, Shakiro was good. He's been to every dance bar, the Blue Diamond, just about for the two-year-old so far. He'll be there or thereabouts in the slipper, you would think. Like the run of Ingratiating, as Dino outlined. Like to see the blinkers go back on. Tiger of Malay kept coming after having a nice trip in behind. High Love got a long way back. Looping run, his chase was good. Thought Converging just peaked out late on the speed. And Mazu wasn't a bad effort. But Shakiro, he'll run well if he backs up. And love to see the blinkers go back on Ingratiating firmly in the corner with Dean there.
The darling of New Zealand races went around yesterday chasing her 14th Group 1 in the Bone Crusher, Melody Bell.
And also Royal Performer across the track in the 250. Now taking over, we've got Melody Bell out wide, swept up to them. Bowden over on the insides and for the fight. So is Avantage. It's Melody Bell, Avantage and Tiptronic. Melody Bell, ring the bell. Melody's back in town. And that is 14 Group 1s, the all-time greatest winning Group 1 winner in the history of New Zealand racing here. She's done it, Melody Bell.
Well, it unfolded pretty well, Dino, and if you were prepared to forgive that last run at Tarapa, you're getting good odds about a champion horse.
I'll have to actually go and have another look at the race, because when we reviewed it a few weeks ago, we said how she got knocked around and was given no hope, and then I'd heard how disappointing she was. So, no, she just got her clear air and swept down the centre. There wasn't a lot between them. Very bunch finish in these Group 1s in New Zealand. But she was too good, Melody Bell. And you got a remarkable price yesterday staying with their best weight for age horse.
Obviously been very well managed throughout her career, Brendan. And listening to managing owner with Joe McKinnon earlier, they might even take up the challenge of heading over to Sydney and even stretching her out further in distance. So good to see her just continue to try and get that win in Sydney. But yesterday was no doubt a good day to be on course at Ellerslie.
Yeah, I'm sure they would have been pleased to have her back in the winner's stall. But importantly, if she got out wide, she got that clear air. And if she can take that form to Sydney, she'll be running on hard in a feature race, no doubt.
What do you think she could compete in, Dino? There was even talk about getting out to the 2,400 metres. What do you think she could compete at in Sydney and be very competitive?
Oh, well, there's not much more to achieve, but, it'd be interesting to see her have a go at the mile and a half and probably take on Very Elegant and see where she fits in. And, you know, if not, I think that probably they go down the Queen Elizabeth path again. I mean, if they wanted to go a lesser option back in distance to a Coolmore Legacy or something, but there's plenty of options for her. But I'd be interested to see her run at 2,400 because she was good enough through the line yesterday.
Terrific days racing Australia and New Zealand yesterday. Time for the boys to wrap it up.
Let's wrap up the Correct Weight Racing Review with the run of the day and the horses to follow.
And Dino, we'll start with you trying to summarise yesterday.
It was the run of the day, the race of the day, however you want to describe it. Mugger 2 was just, the highlight of the afternoon. And as I mentioned, I'm following Ingratiating into the slipper next week. I hope he gets a reasonable draw. I think he'll run really well at a good price.
Anything we should be keeping our eye on throughout Victoria today, Dean?
Yarra Valley Cup Day. It looks a pretty tricky program. I'm going to stick with a horse that was very well found at its first start, Baronessa. Race 3, number 7. I just think with senior rider on and better for the race day experience, Baronessa might bounce into the winner's list today. Race 3, number 7.
Great work this morning, Dino. We'll be following Baronessa this afternoon. Look forward to your contribution right throughout the week on RSN 927.
My pleasure. Thanks, Warren.
Brendan Delaney, we're about to head into Sunday Central with Matt Nevitt as a host today. What are we looking forward to?
Plenty to cover. Yarra Valley Cup Day will kick off the previews. We'll head right around the country, update from the tab, and plenty to catch up with trots and greyhound news. But Yarra Valley Cup Day preview with myself and Harry White. We'll get the program underway before I duck off to Woolamai.
Looking forward to getting a report from Woolamai later on. It's a bit of an annual pilgrimage for you. And how do you summarise yesterday?
Mega 2 run of the day. Vongole onto a dry track. I thought he wasn't comfortable there at all yesterday. I think he's capable of stepping up and winning a race in town shortly.
Great work this morning, Brendan. Enjoy Woolamai. Look forward to your contributions, calling and commentating right throughout the week.
Thanks, Warren.
It takes us out for Correct Weight this morning. Mugger 2, the run of the day for me, and Riddle Me That. Terrific closing effort behind a fast horse in Ancestry. I think he's a coming winner. My horse to follow, Riddle Me That. Mugger 2, the run of the day. What a great race the All-Star Mile was. Thanks for joining us for Correct Weight. Stay tuned for Sunday Central on RSN 927.